Parshas Korach starts off. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi v'dasam v'avirim ben Eliyav v'om ben Pelos ben Ruvain. Korach the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kos, the son of Levi, and Dasan and Avirim, the sons of Eliyav, and Om ben Pelos, the sons of Ruvain, took. I love this parsha. Took what? So we all know the famous Medrash, that the Medrash Tanchuma, and Rashi even starts off with it. Parsha Zuyach and Nidrash of Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma, where Rashi starts off and says this parsha is darshaned unbelievably well in Medrash Tanchuma. Go check out Medrash Tanchuma. You don't need me for this, says Rashi. You can go check out Medrash Tanchuma and everything will be okay. And then Vayikach Korach, Rashi says a bunch of different explanations. Lokachetz Atzmo, he decided to take himself in order to be mafling himself, to separate himself from other people. He took all the Rushes and Hedrios, the people that were in charge. Oh, a lot of crazy things. All right, what was the claim? What was the claim of Korach? So number one, Korach himself, we don't know. We have no idea what he wanted. There's Machlokas if he wanted to become the Kohen Gadol, if he wanted to be the Kohen Gadol and the guy in charge, to go up instead of Aaron and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, you chose your brother to be the Kohen Gadol, to be the high priest. Instead, choose me. I should be the guy who's the Kohen Gadol because I'm the older son, I'm the oldest son of the second born of Levi. So I should be the next one in line to become the Kohen Gadol, not Aaron. If you were taken from Kahas, I should be the next one in line because I'm from Gershon. I'm the other son from Kahas. That was Korach's claim, his original claim, to become the Kohen Gadol. Or was he trying to take over from Moshe Rabbeinu's position? To really take over and just be like, I want to be the leader in front of everybody. It's a bit of a machlokas. And the difference between them is what happens to Korach at the end. There doesn't seem to be a very clear idea of what happens to Korach at the end. Korach is not mentioned after the very beginning of the parsha and everything. He's sort of left to the wayside. Dasan and Aviram take a more prominent role. Dasan and Aviram are the guys who step up, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes to them and says, please guys, forget about it. And Dasan and Aviram are like, no, we're not going to do it. But Korach sort of steps back from everybody and says, listen, I'm not here anymore. He sort of like steps back to the point where I used to think that Korach might not have even died, that he was able to survive and was able to get out of everything. It's not true. That's not what ended up happening. But Lamaisa, one of two different things happened. If he went up against Moshe Rabbeinu and he tried to become the leader of Klal Yisrael, then he was swallowed up in the ground like Dasan and Aviram. If he went up against Aaron and he only tried to become the Kohen Gadol, then that means that he would have put the fire on top of the pans with the Ketoros with the other 250 people, and he died by the fire that burned all those 250 people. So whatever happened to him will depend on what he was trying to do in the first place, and that's a bit of a machlokas. It's not very clear what exactly he was going out for. That's number one, that's Korach. Number two, Dasan v'Aviram. What were they going for? The Chasam Sofer says they were there for the fight. They were the guys who were just there for the fight, to watch everything going around there. They're those guys who just like have the popcorn like sitting on the side. They're just like, hey, let's go. And they checked everything out and they saw what was going on. They decided to get right in there. The Taimi Menachem says a famous, famous line. He says, machlokas l'shem shamayim. It's in Pirkei Avos. Machlokas L'shem Shamayim, Hillel v'Shammai. If you want to have an argument that's for the sake of heaven, that's between Hillel and Shammai, between those two. But a machlokas, Shalo l'shem Shamayim, the example of that is Korach v'Adaso. And the Talmud Hagen points out that Hillel v'Shammai were up against each other. It was Hillel versus Shammai. That's a machlokas l'shem Shamayim, where you could see the other person, you could even talk about the other person, and you didn't have any problems with them. You could say, Shammai, I know what you're saying, but I disagree with you. And Shammai said, Hillel, I know what you're saying, but I disagree with you. But a machlokas shalo l'shem Shamayim is Korach ve'adaso, not Korach versus Moshe, because Moshe was doing it l'shem Shamayim. It was Korach and his own Eda. When you do a shalo l'shem Shamayim, you go up against everybody that you're with. He was going to go up against everybody there. It was Korach and his Eda just fighting against each other, not knowing exactly what they wanted. Dasan Avir wanted to become leaders. Korach wanted to become a leader. Some of the guys wanted to become Kohanim. The other people wanted to become Kohanim and Gedolim. Nobody really had any clue what they wanted. They just knew they wanted to go up against Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Machlokas Shalo L'Shem Shamayim. Now the 250 men, these 250 men that they grabbed, Vayakumu L'Fnei Moshe V'Anashim B'Bnei Yisrael Chamishim Masayim, Nisiei Eda, priests of the congregation, Kriyei Moed, guys who were called out by the Moed, Anshei Shem, men of name, unbelievable people. These were high up people. Some say the actual Nisiim themselves, the actual Nisiim that we mentioned just in the Parshas Naso, those guys got up among the 250 people. What was their claim? What could they possibly want? So the Mishnah Chochma says all 250 of them were Bechors. All 250 of them were Bechors from each Shevet, in each individual Shevet, and they claimed, and they weren't so wrong, they had tremendous milas. They were on a tremendously high level, on a high enough level that they understood that they could become Kohanim and serve in the Beis Hamikdash from then on. And there was no reason why they shouldn't. They didn't lose out because of the Egel Azov. The Egel Azov was done by a couple people. It wasn't them. They didn't do anything wrong. It was the other people that did something wrong. It was that guy and that guy and that guy. The only thing we didn't do is we didn't give enough mussar. We didn't yell at them. We didn't stop them from doing it. So these Nisim got up there and said, technically, we should be Kohanim. Technically, we should be Kohanim. So when Moshe Rabbeinu got up there and told them, all right, guys, make a Ketores. We'll see what Hashem chooses in the morning. They mamish thought that they were also going to become Kohanim. Not Kohanim Gedolim. They were going to be on the same level as Elazar, Itamar, and Aaron. That they would be on the same level as them. They would be able to serve in the Beis Hamikdash and be regular Kohanim along with Elazar, Itamar, and Aaron for the rest of their lives. Because that was the level that they were on. And they were there not just to argue like Dustin Aviram were, and not to grab other people with them. Because they mamish thought, why shouldn't we be Kohanim along with everybody else? Well, Moshe Rabbeinu sort of gave them permission, take the Ketores and bring it in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They said, this is exactly what we want to do. That's why their pans later on were used in the Beis HaMikdash. They were used as a tzipui l'mizbeach, a covering up for the Mizbeach. They were used as something because they didn't really do anything terribly wrong. They didn't do anything that was wrong. They thought that they were doing the right thing. That's number three. Those are all three of them all together. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says an unbelievable word just for the beginning. Vayikach Korach, apparently this is a mechilta. Not a mechilta, I'm sorry, a sifri. But I didn't see the sifri inside. But the Rabbeinu Ephraim says, Vayikach Korach, Korach took them with a meal. He took them and grabbed them and fed them food. He grabbed them and gave them a meal in front of everybody, and he made a massive meal, and he was able to feed them, and he demanded certain parts of the animal for himself. He said, all right, guys, you can eat whatever you want, but give me the choz of ashok, the chest and the leg. The same thing that you would normally give to a Kohen if you were bringing a korban shlamin, I want you to do that right now. This is the first time that the people in the Midbar who had bris milas had ever had basar taiva, meaning pure, adulterated, I guess you should call it, meat. Meat that was pure taiva, pure desire, and nothing else. It wasn't anything like they had up until now, because whenever they brought meat up until now, it had to be shlamin. It had to be a korban. It had to be a special thing that was brought in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, sacrificed for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, given over to the Kohanim, and the Kohanim had to strip off the flesh and give some of it back to the people for them to eat.
This is why the Mayam Loes says this comes right after when all the people demanded meat?
Yes and no. Yes, 100%. It does come right after the people asked for meat. Question is if Parsha Shlach is out of order or not. I think that's what Ken is referring to. It's a question of, is it Baloscha, then Korach, and then Shlach? Or is it Baloscha, then Shlach, then Korach? Yes, that's a good reason as to why, but not exactly. Vayikach Korach is still Darsha. It doesn't say exactly where the Drush comes from. It just says that they did have the meat, and by doing that, what he did was he brought Taiva into Klal Yisrael. And now Bnei Yisrael decided they wanted more than what they had. They're good people. They're chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're happy. They're learning. They're doing everything good. They want a little bit more. They want to be higher than just what they are right now. The regular people wanted to become Nisim. The Nisim wanted to become Kohanim. And the Kohanim, or the Levim, we should say, wanted to become Kohanim Gedol. That's what ended up happening. That everybody started going past a little bit further to go further and further and further up to get more desire to have something that they couldn't have. That was what Korach did. Korach could well afford this. He was well able to afford this. Korach was one of the richest men in the world. He had a third of Yosef's wealth. Why? Midrash Iyud and Perek Tezvav says that Korach was Mamuna. He was appointed on all the riches of Paro and Mitzrayim. All the treasuries of Paro and Mitzrayim, he was in charge of, and he was the person who did everything. So because of that, when they left, he was the one with the keys. So when they left, he put his key into the lock, took out crazy amounts of riches, put it on tons of different types of donkeys and everything, and when he brought them out, all those animals were full of riches just for Korach. So Korach had an unbelievable amount of money just for himself that nobody else could possibly have. That's one of the reasons why Paro got so upset and wanted to chase after Bnei Yisrael, because he went to his treasury and said, where's all my stuff? Korach, how could he have taken all that stuff? And he got so upset at Korach that he decided to run after Klal Yisrael because of all that. Hashem, at the end of the Midrash, says Hashem called him a ganef. Called him a ganef because he stole all the money from Bnei Yisrael. To which everyone asks, what do you mean he stole all the money from Bnei Yisrael? It wasn't Bnei Yisrael's money, it was Paro's money. And if you say, well, Paro would have brought the money to the Yamsuf, and he would have lost it at the Yamsuf, so what? Why in the world couldn't Korach take it? Why wasn't that allowed? So the Ben Ish Chai says an unreal mashal, an unreal parable. Goes ahead and he says, let's say you have a guy who's in a bar. He's a ganef. He's stealing from other people. A thief walks into the bar. So the barkeeper goes up to him and says, hey you, thief, get out of my bar. I don't want you inside my bar. So the thief said, listen, buddy, I'm not taking any money from you. I'm not going to steal from your bar. I'm going to steal from the people inside the bar. You're not going to lose out on any money. I'm just going to take their money and then I'm going to leave. The barkeep says, are you stupid? That money would go to me. That money is going to be my money. If they stay there and they get drunk, they're going to give me all the money that they have in their pockets. So by you taking away that money, by you stealing all that money, I'm going to be losing out. I'm not going to get that money. He said, get out of here. I don't want you. I want to grab that money. It's the same thing. Korach knew that all the money in Mitzrayim, he was a Navi and a Talmud Chacham, and he knew all that money in Mitzrayim was going to end up going to Bnei Yisrael. He knew. It was promised to Avraham Avinu. They knew that the Rechush of Mitzrayim, that all the riches of Mitzrayim was going to end up going to Klal Yisrael. They knew all that. So when Paro left Mitzrayim, he should have said to himself, you know, I really shouldn't take this. It's really for all of Klal Yisrael. But he didn't do that. And if he claims, well, Bnei Yisrael didn't have it anyway, it would have gone to Bnei Yisrael because Paro would have brought it to the Yom Suf and the Jews would have gotten it. Because Paro should have realized that, and he didn't realize that, therefore Korach didn't realize that, therefore he was punished. That's the whole idea why he was punished. That's number one. And number two, there are two ways to use money. I never have a sheet on me when I want it. There we go. There are two ways to use money. There's the chitzoni, the outer way, which is a gashmiyistic way, using it for things that you need in this world, or not things that you need, things that you want in this world. And then there's the panimi way, the inner desire that you look into your neshama and you say, this is what my soul really needs. Not what I want, but what I need. So what I need is the inner desire. What I want is the outer desire. That's the Shapian in Asher. An usher is in the middle. If you do the panimi, it's shy. You get shy olamos, the 310 olamos that are promised. You get 310 olamos. But if you do just the outer one, it becomes ra. That's when it becomes ra. The medrash that says Korach lokach mekach ra la'atzmo is he took a mekach ra. He took a bad buy for himself, a bad deal. That's the ra that he took. He became an usher, but he got the ra of the usher. Not the shy of the usher. That's the difference between the good rich person and a bad rich person. Okay, that was that. And that was even his taina. Part of his claim as to why he was allowed to become such a leader. You ever think about that? Like, why? Where did he come up with this claim from? Why would he have ever thought that he was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu? What made him think that he could be better than Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Chassam Sofer says, because when Yosef collected all the riches of Mitzrayim, and he put all of them away, and he separated a third he gave to Paro, and a third he hid in a certain place, and that part's not going to be found until loss of love when Mashiach comes. And another third was found either by Nebuchadnezzar, some say by Haman, some say by Achashverosh. That's when you get into the whole machlokas. But regardless, when those riches of Yosef were taken, what Yosef did, an unbelievable thing, and we spoke about it a little bit in Parsha Shmos, but not much. Yosef grabbed all the riches that people brought him, as well as all the sparks of Kedusha that everybody brought in with them. Meaning, when Adam Rishon sinned, sparks of Kedusha flew out throughout the entire world. These little sparks of Kedusha are everywhere. And in order for Mashiach to come, he needs to gather all those sparks of Kedusha, bring them together, and bring them back to Eretz Yisrael. Nobody knows how to do that. That's why no one is Mashiach. Mashiach yet. But those sparks are absolutely everywhere. So what people go, what we're supposed to do is we travel throughout the world, or we go everywhere throughout the world, and Jews are everywhere, to grab those nitzotzos of Kedusha, take them for ourselves, and thus Mashiach can come. That's the idea of making brachos everywhere. That's the idea of going out and davening in airports and random places. That's the idea of doing all these things all over the place. Yosef HaTzadik, when people had come to Egypt, because everybody had to go to Egypt, there was a famine throughout the entire world. The only people who had riches, the only people who had money, was in Mitzrayim. Everybody came with all their money down to Mitzrayim. Yosef HaTzadik would take the riches, as well as look at them, and take out the nitzotzos HaKedusha, the sparks of holiness from within every single person. And he grabbed those sparks of Kedusha and put it within the money. And all that money that he had, he put inside the treasuries. That treasury was not just a stom treasure, like, oh, just a big treasure chest full of millions of dollars. It was a treasure chest with millions of sparks of Kedusha. So when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they brought that Kedusha with them. They brought all that Kedusha with them, and that's why when they left, Paro felt they had taken not only our riches, they took everything. They took everything from us. They took even our sparks of Kedusha. We had nothing left. They felt themselves dying. That's the idea, and that's why we have to have Golus afterward, because we still haven't found the last third. We still have to find that last third. But Korach thought, because of that.
I can recall Rabbi Rakach saying that, I think he quotes the Arizal, that we took all of the sparks Mitzvotei Kedusha from Mitzrayim, which is why there's a mitzvah not to go back there.
Sibos Bnei Yisrael. There's nothing left in Mitzrayim. Very good. That third treasure of Yosef HaTzadik, wherever it's buried, is the third part. Yeah, 100%. It's not Mitzrayim anymore. That is 100% true. That's Kol Tzivos Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says. Vayetu Kol Tzivos Bnei Yisrael. I can't remember the wording exactly. But all the tzivos, all the good stuff in Mitzrayim ended up going out. But that's the idea that Korach had. Korach had this crazy, crazy idea, and his idea was, he thinks he's more kadosh than Moshe Rabbeinu. He's got all this rich, all these riches, right? He's got all this money and everything. All this money included all these sparks of Kedusha that everybody had brought into Mitzrayim. Korach had that all to himself, so he thought to himself, all the sparks of Kedusha that are in this money are now mine. So I'm holier than any person around, because no one has as much riches as I do. No one is anywhere close to me. So because I'm the richest guy around and I have all those sparks of Kedusha, I am the greatest that there is out there. He said to Moshe Rabbeinu, look at me. Look how rich I am. You can see that I'm greater than you. He said, get out of here, Moshe Rabbeinu. And he was even proved by his bald head. We spoke about this a little bit before, but bald heads are a big, big thing for Kedusha. We said there are two ways to become bald. Either you have such tummy thoughts that your hair falls outside of your head, or because you have no tummy thoughts, and thus you can't grow any hair, because hair grows from tummy thoughts, from bad thoughts. It's not something we want to go into right now, but it's one of those two. Korach knew he had no tummy thoughts, so he realized how tahor he was. But he looked at Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu had hair on top of his head. And he said, I'm greater than you because I'm bald and you're not. It was just a crazy thing that he had. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're wrong. You're wrong. Because I took much more Kedusha than you ever could. Who's greater? The person that pulled out the sparks of Kedusha himself, or those actual sparks of Kedusha? The person. Who pulled out that person out of Mitzrayim? Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was in Mitzrayim and pulled out Yosef HaTzadik. While everybody else was taking care of the visa, everybody else was taking care of the riches of Mitzrayim and taking all the money for themselves, Moshe Rabbeinu ran to get Yosef HaTzadik. He grabbed Yosef HaTzadik and he had all the Kedusha that was within Yosef, which is much greater than any treasure that you can ever imagine, or all the sparks of Kedusha that were around there. He grabbed that Kedusha and took it for himself. So said Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm much, much greater than you, Korach, and you don't realize that. Korach didn't believe it. He said, no, all the Kedusha is within the money, not within Yosef HaTzadik, and got swayed by the money to be able to think that he was greater. Yeah.
So he took Yosef's bones because that was the only thing that was there?
Not because it was the only thing that was there. Because he did feel, Yosef HaTzadik had sworn everybody that he had to leave Mitzrayim before they left out, you know, before they went out. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, according to your reasoning, Korach, I'm greater because I have Yosef HaTzadik himself. I not only have the money I don't even care about. I have the actual Kedusha. Not just the sparks of Kedusha that Yosef pulled out, but the actual Kedusha of Yosef. That's even greater. That's what he claimed. Yeah.
Does our money today have all those lots of sparks of Kedusha?
No, especially American money.
And now I'm What I meant was, is that why it's such a tava for us now?
No. The tava is all there because it's money. that's totally different.
The spiritual energy from everyone, all colleagues from Mitzrayim?
Not all, but a third of it. A third of it altogether. The other third was spread throughout all of Klal Yisrael, and there was more riches that the other Mitzrayim had. Just there was, it wasn't, yeah, there was other Kedusha that was around. All right, now I forgot to look it up. Oh, man. There is such an awesome board, and I forgot to look it up. There are two tinas. I didn't have it on the plane. That's my problem. I had it in a previous notebook, and I didn't copy this previous notebook. There are two tinas of Moshe that Korach had. There's a third one, but the Beharis one we're not going to go into. The two tinas were, if you have a room full of Sfarim, you have to put a mezuzah up on the wall, on the doorway. So that's number one. Number two, if you have a Beged Kulo Tchelas, you have to put on tzitzis with tchelas on them. So you have to have the strings with tchelas on them. Because you already have the tchelas, what do you need the strings for? Moshe Rabbeinu answered to both of them, yes, you need the mezuzah, and yes, you need the strings with tchelas. I once went up to one of my rabbeim, Rav Chosid, in Beis Yisrael, and I asked him, what was the answer to the taina? Korach claimed, well, what do you need the strings for? You have the blue tchelas on the beged itself. What do you need the mezuzah for? You have the sfarim inside the room. What's the answer to Korach's taina? So his answer I didn't understand, and I still don't understand. Eventually, maybe I'll be able to understand it. He said to me, do you really think it was a good taina? That was his answer. So I said, yeah. And he said, you have to think about that. So I don't know. I don't have a full answer to what that means, but I did get a little bit. The idea is like this. Tzitzis strings are used as shmira. I don't know if anybody's seen the Gemara Menachos and Daf Mem Dalet, but the Gemara over there goes to a person that was very into Zonos. And the one thing that stopped him from being with his very famous Zona was the fact that his tzitzis strings slapped him in the face right before he did the act. He was taking off his shirt, and as he took off his shirt, his tzitzis strings slapped him in the face. That hurts. That hurts. And that's one thing. It's a shmira over anything else. That's number one. Number two is a mezuzah. Why do you have a mezuzah up on your wall? I know Uncle Moshe holds one thing, but why do we normally have mezuzahs up on our wall? For what? Shmira lemazik. Both of them are ideas of shmira. The Beharis, the idea of the saras that Korach brought up, I don't understand. That's a third part. It's not mentioned in normal midrashim. It's only mentioned in like the psikta de Beirav Kahana. But I don't understand that one. I'm leaving that to the side. But these two are shmiras. So what Korach was claiming to Moshe, I mean, it was a great claim. What do you need the shmira for? We're good enough as is. We're kadosh as anything. What do we need anything more than the actual beged itself? What you need is shmira to stop yourself from being with an Eishes Ish, to stop yourself from being with a Zona? Said Korach, I taina on you, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you must have problems with Eishes Ish. Because why would you need strings? The beged is good enough. The tchelis on the beged reminds me of God. That's good enough. What do I need the strings for, the extra shmira? If I sperm all around and I'm learning all day long, what do I need the mezuzah on the door for? I don't need the shmira. The shmira, it's good enough as is. Hold on one second. But the idea is, and that Moshe Rabbeinu told him, is that you're dead wrong. The shmira is absolutely necessary. The fact that you think you don't need a shmira, the fact that you think that the beged is good enough or that the room is good enough, that's where you're wrong. Because the shmira is because you think you're going to be able to be okay. The satan lets you think that way. The satan makes you think, everything's all right. Don't worry. Daniel, everything will be fine. Just walk into that room. You'll be good. Everything will be fine. And who knows what you're going to find inside there? Just to give you a quick example, now that I was just in Eretz Yisrael, can't say anything bad about Eretz Yisrael, but there's a certain place in Tel Aviv that everybody should know should go absolutely nowhere near that place. There are certain places that are just, they're off limits. It's by the old Tachana Merkazi.
Is it like a street or set of streets?
Okay. Let's say. And just stay absolutely nowhere near it. Stay absolutely nowhere near it. A person who walks into that idea, he could say to himself, you know, like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm perfectly fine. I know I'm not going to be swayed. I know I'm not going to turn around to see anything. I know everything's going to be okay. A person could say that to himself. But it's not true. You need the shmira more than anybody else because the satan's making you think, don't worry about it. Just walk down the street. You'll be okay. Everything will be fine. You don't have to worry about anything. That shmira, the extra shmira is necessary for you to know, don't go anywhere near that place. That's where where Korach was wrong. That's where Korach was wrong, because you have a little balloon, you poke a tiny little hole in it. You think, oh, it's only a tiny little hole. Yeah, but the hole makes the balloon go everywhere, and then it flutters down to the ground, and it's absolutely nothing left. There's no air inside the balloon. That's the idea why Korach was absolutely dead wrong. There's a Lishit Hassel for it, and that's the Chassam Sofer and the Chassam Sofer, the famous Chassam Sofer that explains it, and I don't remember it offhand. That Korach's whole time against Moshe Rabbeinu was exactly that. I didn't write it down. I have an extra little line and a half over here that's absolutely empty. My bad. Okay. This is the cool part. Who was Korach? Who was he? Alright. I think everybody knows that I like going into Gogulin, so I might as well. I bought another Sefer on Kabbalah that I'm not allowed to do until I'm 40, called Sefer HaChazianos by Rechaim Vital. Not allowed to do it, but I've wanted this Sefer for so long. So I just bought it, and I said, I put it on my bottom shelf already, and I just turned it around, and I said, I know I can't do this, but I have to buy it. Okay, so it's all there. Who is Korach? The Nitzitza Shimshon said that Cain, the original Cain with Hevel, did three things that were absolutely wrong. Number one, he was jealous of Hevel because of everything that happened. Number two, he tried to take the second wife of Hevel. Hevel was born with two twin sisters. Cain was born with only one. He tried to take that second wife. And number three, he killed Hevel. Kishivasayim yukam Cain. That yukam Cain, Cain will get up again in generations later. Yukam is Yisro Korach Mitzri. That in the future, Cain will come back as Yisro, Korach, and the Mitzri. His neshama came back into Yisro. His nefesh came back into the Ish Mitzri that Moshe Rabbeinu killed. The ruach went into Korach. Now, the neshama going into Yisro, that took care of one sin. He took away, or he tried to take away the second wife of Hevel. So he gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is Hevel. Moshe is Moshe. Sheis Hevel. He gave back to Moshe Rabbeinu Tzipora, his daughter, who was that second wife. So he gave over that. That was taken care of. Everything was perfectly fine. The Ish Mitzri, because his nefesh had killed Hevel, so his nefesh got a tikkun by killing the Ish Mitzri. He destroyed the Ish Mitzri, and that was taken care of. The third sin was jealousy. That was the ruach of Cain. That ruach of Cain went into Korach. Korach's whole job in this world was to get over his jealousy of Moshe Rabbeinu, to be jealous. And that's why, up until now, you don't hear a Korach. Korach's a tremendous person, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. This is the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided it's time for the Ruach of Cain to come into Korach, to enter inside Korach, and affect him. Let's see what happens to Korach now. Let's see if Korach can do this. Can he rule over himself, take over himself, and be able to fix up that last sin? And if Cain does that, if all three sins are taken care of, he fixed up the killing, he fixed up the marriage, if he fixes up this third thing of the jealousy that he had for Hevel, then everything's going to be okay. Mashiach will come. Moshe, who's Hevel, will come along to be Mashiach, and everything's going to be okay. Everything will be fine. We'll be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and everything will be fine for the rest of time. Can that happen or can that not happen? We know. I think we know the end of the story. It didn't happen. Korach messed it up. Why did Korach mess it up? Cain is pretty darn powerful. Pretty darn powerful. I'm not going to go into the whole the Rav Cain and the Tov of Hevel. There's a lot of behind that also. There's Rav Yaakov Abuchatzera. He's the famous Bava Sali's great-great-grandfather who flew on a flying carpet to Turkey from Eretz Yisrael. It's the famous story of the flying carpet. It's Rav Yaakov Abuchatzera. He's got a whole piece on this, on the good of Hevel and the bad of Cain. And it's going through very, very confusing. I'm not going to go into that whatsoever. But the whole kind of Moshe Rabbeinu was exactly that. Moshe was Hevel, knows he's Hevel, and knows that Korach is Cain, and knows that Cain is trying to destroy him. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, Ish Echad Yecheta. One man is sinning. One man, Cain, is the one that sinned. You're going to get angry at everybody at Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's one guy. It's just Cain. Get rid of Cain. Kadosh Baruch Hu, help them out. And then Korach will be okay and everything will be fine. Don't be angry at them just because of this. And that's why he called out to Kadosh Baruch Hu a very, very strange Lashon. He said, Kel Elokei Aruchos. God, O God of the Spirits. Now that's a weird, weird Lashon. Like, if I was Christian, I'd say that was a very, very strange thing to say. The Holy Spirit that's out there. The God, what is it? The God, the Ghost, the Holy Spirit. I forget how it goes exactly. The Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. The Spirit, the Holy Ghost. Yeah, so the Ruach is just a weird word. Is that Spirit? It counts as Ruach. We'll just say the Ghost is a Ruach. But it's a very, very strange strange lashon that comes about. But the pshat is kel lo kel ruchos. Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know the ruach of Korach is Cain's ruach. It's Cain's fault. It's not anybody else's fault. But because Korach couldn't go over it, couldn't get over it, couldn't rule over himself, what happened? He never fixed it up. Thus, ha'ish echad yecheta. Yecheta is in what tense? Future tense. Who's it referring to? Ha'ish echad yecheta. You come Cain. We didn't finish it off. There is you come. And you come stands for Yisro, Korach, and Mitzri. That's true. But there's also Cain. Cain stands for Korach, Yeshu, Notzri. That Cain ended up coming back. And because Korach messed this all up, Cain came back within Korach and later on became a person by the name of Yeshu. Now, there's something called Jush Bechikur. It's a type of gematria that's very, very hard to do. I have no idea how to use it. But the fact is, it goes like this. You take the letters of, let's say, Korach. And you take the letters and you put them in different orders, but it's a kuf. This is a kuf. Resh, I think it's like this. And then Ches. I think this is how it goes. Let me just check. Yeah, that's exactly how it goes. Korach. Oh no. This is a kuf. A Ches, and this is a self. The way it goes is you have Korach on the top three. The bottom three is Yeshu. The pay, because it should be the pay sophis, it should be like that because it's kuf. So it's 80 plus 80. 80 plus 80 is 160, which is the gematria of Kayin. And then the last one is Yud Tuf Resh Vav, which is Yisro. So all the people that are involved, Kayin, Korach, Yisro, and Yeshu, are all put in together. And the Mitzri himself is also around in here. I don't know how exactly, but the Nisusa Shimshin explains it, and I just don't understand it. But the Nisusa Shimshin says that everyone is involved in this entire connection. Everyone's involved in this, and we see that later on he comes back as Yeshu. That's the pshat behind Ha'ish Echad Yecheta. Ha'ish is the gematria of Yeshu. That's Ha'ish Echad Yecheta. The Ish, who is it? Yeshu. Yecheta, he will sin. Valkola Eda Tiksov. And that's the pshat V'achala Osam Karaga. Kiroga, I'm sorry. I will destroy them all in a moment, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Osam Kiroga, according to Rabbi Noah Fraim, is a gematria of 740, which is the same gematria as Echad Yulad Yeshua Notri. That there's somebody who's going to be born by the name of Yashka. And that person's going to come along all because of this. And that's the pshat behind and given Nun Zayin of Aleph. When Yeshu is known as the person that they call up from the grave, they call him up as Oso Ha'ish. That man, the same man who was Korach. Oso Ha'ish, the same Ha'ish Echad Yechata that we have over here. Ha'ish is that gematria of Yeshu. That's who the person was. That all got messed up all because of that. Yaakov Avinu saw this happening. And all the way back in Parshas Vayechi, when he saw Shevet Levi, and he saw what was going to happen with Shevet Levi, he saw everything that was going to happen with Korach and everything, he immediately said, "Besodom al tavo nafshi." In their sod, don't let my nefesh go. Don't allow my soul to go anywhere near them. The sod meaning through the Gilgulim of what's going to happen with Korach and everything else. Don't let myself come in anywhere. And that's why it says Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kaz ben Levi, but not ben Yaakov. Yaakov refused to allow himself to get involved in the entire machlokas. Refused to get himself anywhere near there. There's a hope shot as to why that has to be. Shivrei Klipa and everything. If you guys want, it's all about Pesukei Dezimra, but it's not for right now. It's a very hard little piece. But the idea is, Korach ben Yitzhar came up with parts of Yaakov, but couldn't come up with the whole thing. Korach ben Yitzhar is Yabok, which is every letter of Yaakov's name except for the Ayin. Why not the Ayin? The Ayin is the gematria of Sod. That's why Yaakov said, Besodom al tavo nafshi. Don't let my Ayin come anywhere near Korach. I don't want Korach going anywhere near the Ayin Zakenim or anybody like that. He doesn't want him near anything of the Kiddusha of Klal Yisrael. So Korach was able to pull down parts of Yaakov's name, but not able to get everything. He wasn't able to go all the way through. Alright, that's a very, very hard one. little board. The last thing we're going to say is this board. This is an absolutely unbelievable board. V'nafal panav. After Moshe Rabbeinu heard everything that was going on, v'nafal panav. He fell on his face. I'm not so sure exactly where the pasuk is exactly because I didn't have my chumash, but I believe it is. Where is it? Does anybody know where it is offhand? Vayishma Moshe vayibol panav. Moshe Rabbeinu heard what Korach had to say, and he fell on his face. So everybody asks, why did he fall on his face? Like, it's not time for Tachman. Why in the world did he fall on his face? So the easy answer is, number one, he was davening. That's the easiest answer. That's the easy answer. That seems to be what Targum HaKadosh tries to say, and Pinyonis Menuzil seems to be the easiest answer. Another answer is that we know, wherever the Chachamim put their eyes, omiso omi, meaning, there are lots of cases in the Gemara where all of a sudden Rabbi Yochanan, or Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, or famous people, will look at somebody and turn them into dust. Turn them into a pile of bones. Turn them into nothing. Just kill them. Why? Because the Chachamim, when they got upset, were able to look at a person and take out the Kedusha from within that person. And when you take out all of the Kedusha from within that person, there's nothing left but the skin and bones. So he just dies there on the spot. But not only that, he makes it look crazy that he's been dead for hundreds and hundreds of years. That's what Talmud Chacham has the power to do. Moshe Rabbeinu knew he was so upset by the tainas of Korach that Korach goes up to him. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest anav of all time. The greatest anav of all time. Korach goes up to him and says, how could you put yourself in charge? How could you have made Aaron in charge? How could you have done this to everybody? How could you have done this? Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest anav of all time, sits there and says, why are you arguing on me? How could you do this to me? Who do you think you are? How could you do this to me? He immediately thought to himself, if I look at them, I'm going to kill all of them. Moshe Rabbeinu, if you would have looked up, would have made everybody into a pile of bones. So instead, he just looked straight down and didn't look at them whatsoever. Why not just do it? Moshe Rabbeinu is that big of an honor. Rabbi Yochanan would have done it. And that's not a chisar in Rabbi Yochanan. That just tells you how poor Rabbi Yochanan is. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would have done it. Moshe Rabbeinu was such a big honor if he was able to not do it. To make sure that he wouldn't do it. That was v'nafal panav. But there's an awesome answer. The Baal HaTanya, I read this in Sipuri HaChassidim, the stories of the Hasidim, by Shlomo Yosef Zevin, just to connect myself back to Neveyako, because Zevin Street is Neveyako. Anyway, but it says that the Baal HaTanya had a guy come up to him once and said, why do you wear a hat that's so different from all the other hats? He doesn't mean the Lubavitch hat, even though the Baal HaTanya was the first Lubavitch Rebbe, but that, it wasn't referring to that. The Lubavitch Rebbe, the first Lubavitch Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya had a huge hat. They call it the Rabbiner hat. Just, he looked different from everybody else. Everybody else had, like, I guess you could say just a big fur hat or whatever it was. And he had like a large brim and it looked different from everybody else. So a guy came up to him and said, what makes you different from everybody else? Why should you be different from everybody else? So all the Talmidim saw the Baal HaTanya immediately put his head down like this, as if he was saying Tachlis. Immediately put his head down. After about 3 minutes, he looked back up and he answered back and he said, Roshei Alfei Yisrael, said the pasuk of Roshei Alfei Yisrael. He said, there are differences between the heads and the bodies of Klal Yisrael. The bodies of Klal Yisrael have to have one lavush. You wear a shirt for the body. You wear a robe for the body. But the head just has a turban or a different type of a thing. So he said, there are different parts of Klal Yisrael. I'm the head of Klal Yisrael. People have chosen me as the head. As the head of Klal Yisrael, I've got to wear different clothing than the rest of the body. I've got to wear different clothing than the rest of the body. So I was chosen to be the leader, and therefore, I should go ahead and wear something different. That was his answer. Talmidim went to the Baal HaTanya afterward and said, why did you put your head down? Why did you put your head down like that? What was the point? Now, obviously, we know it has a connection with this week's parasha, otherwise I wouldn't have brought this up right after Vayipol Panav. Must be with that. But they had no clue. It wasn't during Parshas Korach or anything. So they said, why did Rebbe put his head down like that? So Baal HaTanya said, I learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu. As soon as I heard that this guy came up to me with a claim like that, I thought to myself, just like Moshe Rabbeinu did, maybe this is Mina Shamayim. Maybe I'm having a little bit of gaiva. Maybe I'm having a shtickle gaiva within me. And I didn't even realize it. So I immediately put my head down and said Tachnun and knocked myself down to say to myself, do I have any gaiva? And I looked into myself and said to Valatani, I found no gaiva whatsoever. No gaiva inside myself whatsoever. When I saw that there was really no gaiva and I wasn't going to say what I was about to say because of gaiva and that it's not Mina Shamayim, this guy's just arguing on me, stam, he's trying to be in my commentary is trying to, you know, put me down, that's when I was able to lift up my head and tell him, no, you're wrong, I'm the leader of Klal Yisrael. But if I would have seen Gaiva within me, then I would have said to him, you're 100% right, and I couldn't say anything. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayishma Moshe, he heard it, Vayipal Panav. He immediately fell down into his face and said to himself, am I doing something wrong? Do I have a little bit of Gaiva? Did I mess up on Parshas Baaloska? Parshas Baaloska says, Moshe Rabbeinu was the honor of Mikol Adam. There has never been a more humble person. Is that right? Did I lose that? Or am I still okay? So Vayipal Panav, he fell down into his face and he started doing Takanu and saying to himself, did I have any Gaiva? When he realized he had nothing, then he spoke up by Yadaber al Korach al Kol Adas Leimor Boker v'Yoda Hashem es Asher Lo v'Esakodosh v'Yikri v'Love. In the morning, you'll see you're all going to be dead wrong. That's when he came down with a real, real claim against them and said, I know you guys are dead wrong because I have no Gaiva within me. This isn't Mina Shemayim whatsoever. You guys are being the Mekantarim. You guys are accusing me of something that is not true. And because of that, you're all going down. You're all going down. That's what he ended up telling them. So that's an unbelievable answer from the Baal HaTanya. That's an absolutely unbelievable answer. We're going to end with one stam little thing. In Bria Yivra Hashem. I'm trying to think whether we should go with this or not. See, it's crazy. You know what? I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say it really quickly, but I haven't gotten to say it all year long. Dustin and Avira, why in the world are they still alive? If I was God, I would have smacked them down 20 years ago. What in the world are they still doing around? Stop it already. Get them out of here. These guys were Shoyim Gemurim all the way through. They stayed in Mitzrayim. They told on Moshe Rabbeinu. They were punching each other. They were called Rishoyim by Moshe Rabbeinu. They were just one thing after the other. They told Lashon Hara on Bnei Yisrael later on. They were part of the people that caused all the problems in Mitzrayim, and they complained to Moshe Rabbeinu about they said, you're not really from God. Later on, they didn't even leave Mitzrayim. Says the Yonas Museum, they stayed in Mitzrayim extra. They took the mun and they put it out all throughout Shabbos to make the people go out and go get it so the birds have to come and eat it. They went out on Shabbos to go search for the mun. They left it overnight and made it become all wormy. They complained that Moshe Rabbeinu every single time during the Misonin, during everything, Yisavu Taiva. And all of a sudden, they come along in Parshas Korach. What's up with Dustin and Avira? I can't go through the whole board right now. Suffice to say, I've seen it in three different places already. Dustin and Aviram were on Sanhedrin. They were part of Sanhedrin. Whether they actually had Nevuah, that I don't know. I know, I'm absolutely positive about this, and I can't find it, but I'm positive that I will find it eventually. Eldad and Medad are without a question connected to Dustin and Aviram. There's no question Eldad and Medad are connected to them somehow. How exactly? I don't know. I'll find it eventually. I haven't found it. But Eldad and Medad are somehow connected to them. There's too many similarities to what Eldad and Medad had. Dustin and Aviram are tremendous to me to find. The problem was, they were too sure of themselves. They never believed in Moshe Rabbeinu. But now, with Parshas Korach, this is the first time that instead of going up against Moshe Rabbeinu and denying what Moshe Rabbeinu said, because they felt that they were Nevi'im and high enough to be able to argue on Moshe, now all of a sudden they kept doing tshuva. They kept saying, you're right, Moshe is right, Moshe Rabbeinu is right, and they kept doing tshuva one after the other. Now finally, Kadosh Baruch Hu made them go, Avera Gerera Savera, to where they argued on God himself. They said, Kadosh Baruch Hu never chose you, or Kadosh Baruch Hu never did this, or Kadosh Baruch Hu's not really out there, if he really thinks this way. That's when Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you guys are gone. And that's when he created the whole hole in the ground, sucked them up into the ground, says to me, Amlois and Yaakov Ruveni, that it wasn't just a hole. It was a hole as big as the body. So like there were little holes for the legs, then it became a hole for the body, then it became a hole for the arms, and then it closed itself up. It was just one little, like, it was like a straw, like, that's what it was. Like quicksand that just sucked them up into the ground. Dustin and Aviram were gone and taken care of. But it tells you a tremendous power of tshuva. That Dustin and Aviram were able to do tshuva every single time for what they did. They were able to survive because of that. It's a tremendous level of tshuva. It's something to really think about. How powerful your tshuva really, really is. Okay, we won't go into anything more for now. That's it. Have a good Shabbos, guys.